Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Bottom Line Sports Show, with great guests and great lives all call home. Now, from the Man Cave Studios in New Jersey, here are your hosts of the Bottom Line Sports Show.
Tuesday edition of the Bottom Line Sports Show. Gerald Brown, I'm flying solo momentarily, but it's a good thing. Great show on tap, as always, 347-324-5839. I just can't believe that football is over. And, you know, for 6 months out of the year, it's such a fabric of what we talk about that it's really surprising that we don't have anything to talk about in terms of football related. But still in all, there's a couple of moves that's going to be made, or actually is being made. We'll discuss. It's heavy basketball. Heavy basketball. So if you're a basketball fan, this is the show for you. We're going to cover some basketball. NBA All-Star Weekend is right around the corner. Yes. Really, really happy about that. Fife Dog joins us. The legendary Fife Dog joining us. Fife, I want to start off this show where really in discussing really just the surprise, the unfortunate death of the late, great Dean Smith. And you were very, very outspoken in some of the posts that I saw you and your niece. Really, again, that was very touching. And it seems like everybody had something that was touching to remember such a great individual as Coach Dean Smith. In your opinion, what did Dean Smith, first of all, mean to you, and then UNC and college basketball in general?
I mean, Dean Smith, I don't even know how to explain it. I'm so devastated still, man. It's like I don't even know where to start. But I just like the loyalty that he showed to his players and the loyalty they always showed in return. In other words, okay, while being part of UNC, while being on campus, they were loyal. When they left, they always came back, no matter what. No matter who was the coach, they always came back. And that's nothing but Dean Smith through and through. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think of one word that when you just said that, family. You know, and in mm-hmm. purest yep. essence, what it was about, where it was really generations upon generations of former NBA, former players from UNC that came back. And no matter what the color of your skin was, you were family. Mm-hmm. You were a brother. And you went through those moments in the test of times. And let's be honest. I mean, there were a lot of people that didn't like, you know, University of North Carolina. And really, again, you think about some of the fans up in Durham, you know, the rivalry between right. them and Duke University. But I think that was really telling, was really spoke volumes to the fact is how influential he was in terms of really taking a stand with really the civil rights movement. First ACC, right. You know, first ACC African-American player and Charlie Scott mm-hmm. going there. So really yes. he broke a lot of boundaries and stuff. And I look at it, Fife, and he helped build the ACC, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
You know, you had some great
Absolutely.
Coaches. I think about one person that comes to my mind, and that is, you know, Lefty Gizelle and God rest his soul, Lynn Bias and stuff. But that was the fabric of what the ACC was all about. But Dean mm-hmm. Smith really and that program really set the tone. Agree or disagree
right.
in terms of helping build the ACC to what it once was compared to now?
The ACC wouldn't be what it is if it wasn't for Dean Smith, period. He went through a time where he couldn't win the big one, so forth and so on. But even in the midst of not winning the big one, he helped build that conference to what it is. Would there be a Jimmy Valvano? Would there be a Coach K? I don't think so.
Yeah,
and those guys were great in their own right. But Dean Smith was the patriarch, I guess you could say, of all of that. when it comes to that conference.
That was a good point. I mean, that's an outstanding point. What are some of your memories of watching his coach teams? I remember, and like I said before, you kind of were envious of the fact is that they had a lot of the talent. And let's be honest, you know, Fife, I don't know if I speak for you, but if you lived up in the eastern northeast, primarily the New York tri-state area, we saw Big East basketball when it was on Channel 9. And you saw the Big East game of the week, and we had the Georgetown versus the St. John's. You had the Pittsburgh, Syracuse, all those games, Georgetown versus Syracuse, Syracuse versus St. John's. You had those Big East games that really meant something. And it was an extra added incentive to really see what was transpiring in the ACC. Because, as I said before, if you lived in the East and the Northeast, you really were focused on Big East basketball at its best.
Right. And I definitely was focused on – I like the Big East Conference more than the ACC Conference. It just so happened that my favorite team played in the ACC. I love James Worthy. I originally started liking the team because I had an aunt that moved there, and she used to send me the gear and stuff like that. And, you know, I fell in love with the colors and all of that. But then once I really started to understand the game for what it was and his coaching methods and so forth, I became really and truly engulfed in everything Tar Heel. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I love St. John's. I love Pearl Washington at Syracuse. I love the way John Thompson ran his program, the Hoya paranoia, the whole nine. You had to have that starter jacket back in the day. You know that. But
I'm
going to
take it a step further. I would take it a step further, Fife. You wasn't you was official if you had the blue and white, the baby blue, powder blue, blue and white Converse sneakers that North Carolina used to wear. Where when you had Kenny Smith and them there,
right, right. I remember. I never had a pair of those, but you're right. You was official because see, the reason why I didn't have a pair of those was because being in the Northeast, you repping Big East, you was rocking the red and white dunks for St. John's, the orange and white dunks for Syracuse, the navy blue and white dunks for Villanova, and, of course, the gray and blue joints for Georgetown. You was rocking those. But then when Jordan finally got his shoe, oh, yeah, I had to get them powder blue, them Carolina ones. You already know.
But I'm talking about Converse, Fife. I'm talking about
I know, but I didn't have a pair.
Georgetown,
I'm just going to keep it real with you.
You had the Georgetown Nikes. The big, you remember the big Nike, the Nike Dunk? So you had the Georgetown blue and gray Nikes that had the Hoyas on the back or had Nike.
Right.
You had the Syracuse orange and white, which was just ferocious. The St. John's red and white. It was a beautiful thing. But I can recall some of my fondest memories of you know, Dean Smith's North Carolina teams. I actually remember, and God rest his soul, when Lynn Bias and Maryland beat UNC in the opening of the Dean Dome. And I remember when Steve Bucknall took the ball out. And I see this play like it's just happening yesterday when Lynn Bias stole the ball, went up and dunked it backwards, over his head, dunked it backwards on Steve Bucknall, and they made the run. You talk about an all-time classic, but, I mean, you go back to the Georgetown versus North Carolina in the championship. I remember players like Jimmy Black. You had Kenny Smith. I mean, it was something to wear that Tar Heel and J.R. Reed. The list goes on and on, but those are some of my memories in terms of North Carolina and what he had with those teams, very special players.
Yeah, I just remember jumping around in the house when Brown passed the ball to Worthy. I was jumping around like crazy because I was scared of Patrick Ewing and them boys. You already know what they was bringing to the table. So I was petrol. But when he made that errant pass or when Jordan hit the shot, man, I was jumping around like crazy. And, of course, we had no idea Jordan was going to be Jordan. You know what I'm saying? So those are, like, great memories, man. Great memories.
Yeah. It's funny you left out that how Fred Brown from the Boogie Down Bronx, Fred Brown threw that ball to James Worthy and messed that up. Fred Brown out of Adlai Stevenson, but you know, okay, still got love for Fred Brown and all of them. But
yeah,
how much would you? How much would how much would you say UNC basketball program has lost in terms of being an elite program since Coach Smith left? I mean, when he abruptly retired, you had Bill Guthridge that took over for some time. Then you had mm-hmm. Matt Doherty that came in there, and it was such a turmoil and a very tumultuous setting.
Honestly, he retired in 97, and Guthridge got the guys to the Final Four. I mean, they lost. Could you imagine if Stackhouse and Wallace had stayed when Vince and Jameson came in? That would have been crazy. Guthridge would have had the same amount of love as Dean Smith if those guys would have stayed and played with Jameson and Vince. However, they did make it to the Final Four. They didn't win. That's when Kentucky was just blitzing everybody like fourth quarter back then. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the turmoil came about when Matt Doherty took over. That's when it was bad. You know what I'm saying? And that's when, you know, Raymond Felton and them were freshmen and sophomores or something like that. And then eventually Dean Smith finally got Roy Williams to come back from Kansas, and we were back on the map again. I don't think they never really fell off, with the exception of when Matt Doherty took over. Right now, it's a little rough because of everything that's been going on since, you know, Rashad McCants got on the snitching movement. You know what I'm saying? So it's been a little rough. It's been a little rough, you know?
Yeah, it has been. And I think that you're just seeing that the fact is they were once invincible in terms of getting the elite players. It's so interesting to see how much the tide has turned that now – it was almost a foregone conclusion that your top players were going to North Carolina. But now you're seeing the wealth mm-hmm. being spread around. You look at guys like John Thompson, Jim Boeheim, Mike Krzyzewski, Dean Smith, and John Wooden, to name a few. Will we ever see coaches like this in the college game again? I don't think so. I don't think we're going to have those type of coaches no more. Once Boeheim leaves, I don't think it.
I don't think so neither. I really don't. And I'm not going to sit here and blame it on the one-and-dones, because when you look at a coach like Coach K, he's still on top of his game because he was able to adapt and just keep it moving. I'm sure he'd love to have a player like Elton Brand stay 3 years, or Christian Laettner stay the whole time, or Bobby Hurley, but it's not like that anymore. He ended up getting the Jabari Parkers and the Luol Dangs and the Kyrie Irvins, and they were one-and-done. But he still stayed on top of his game. You know what I mean? So a lot of coaches, they just haven't been adapting like that. I'm not going to say who I think hasn't been adapting like that, but there's a lot of coaches that haven't been able to adapt. And because they're not adapting to what it is these days, not saying it's the right way, but it is what's going on, they're not going to be what it was. They're not going to be a Larry Brown who could win on a professional and collegiate level. It's not going to be like that anymore, the Denny Crumbs of the world and, you know, the Rick Pitinos who knew how to finagle around all of that. You know what I mean?
But
it's not the same.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Gerald Brown, Fife Dog, Jake Fisher coming up, going to talk some about college basketball as well as, Philadelphia 76ers basketball. You know, I think that the main reason, if you look at it, that we mm-hmm. haven't had that type of situation occur, and I don't think it's going to happen anymore, is the fact is that we live in a society now with so much social media. Every move is scrutinized. You have to win now. There is no room to build a program. If you have 3 or 4 years, bad years or, marginal years, you're gone. You are gone. And that's where now inevitably I think it's a domino effect, because the fact is that you have the powerhouse conferences. So you have guys like Rick Pitino or Jim Boeheim. We're not going to see those guys anymore, simply because the expectation is you have to win each and every single year. Think about a guy like Brad Stevens. What made him so successful? He coached at Butler University. Next thing you look at, Butler's in the A-10 now. Shaka Smart, which was doing something that people never thought would transpire. He was at VCU. They were a part of the Colonial. They went from a Colonial mid-level Division I to A-10. And this was something that I said before, we're not going to see coaches be able to have the longevity, because the expectation is to win now, and you know, you're not going to be able to teach. And also factor in, you have guys that you know, are leaving for the NBA. If you recruit an NBA player, you know, I mean, Gordon Hayward, you know, for Butler University, you're not going to have those kids 3 years unless they make some changes.
Right.
It's not going to work out that way.
And when you take those jobs, you know this off top, so you have to adapt right away. Because if you're not winning, just like you said, it's curtains. So you have to accept the fact that it's going to be one and done. So get on your recruiting grind, similar to a Calipari, and get it done. Period.
Yeah, yeah, and that's where I said before, you know, because I mean, look, college coaches nowadays in elite programs, they're paid like professional athletes. You're paid a little amount of money. Think about it this way, Fife. Can you imagine if John Calipari didn't come in there and get that thing rolling? Imagine if he had a sluggish first season, or maybe two seasons. People would not sit back and allow him to build. I think that we've seen guys like Dean Smith, Jim Boeheim. These guys were able to build programs in an era that, at the end of the day, you saw competitive basketball. It wasn't the 24 hours, 7 days a week cycle that we live in, and expecting you know, success, immediate success right out the bat, especially when you have kids that are going one and done. Now, Fife, you are, hands down, a UNC diehard. You're a UNC fan, and like I said before, nothing but the utmost respect, because I thought it was very, very – it was touching, man. It was touching, you know, you holding the bat up and you having your niece and stuff, you know, really reading about a rest in peace to Dean Smith. I thought that was beautiful, man, to have it on Instagram. But I got to ask you this, Fife. This is almost comparable to the New York Yankees. Give me your the greatest UNC player to ever come out of that program.
The greatest UNC player? I have to say James Worthy.
Wow. Over Billy Cunningham?
I mean, you got a good point, but like I always tell you, G, I didn't get to see Billy Cunningham play in college. And I know the numbers, the whole nine yards, the success he had after he left and the whole nine, but I was able to see James Worthy, Perkins, Kenny Smith, Michael Jeffrey Jordan actually play. I didn't get to see Billy play, unfortunately. I'm not that old.
Well, the best player you saw, Fife. The best UNC player you saw.
The best UNC player I saw. It's like a three-way tie, honestly. It is.
I
gotta
say, three-way tie. Come on, Fife. Come on.
But you know how nice they were back then. No, come on.
Come on, man.
I gotta say, James Worthy. He made me a Carolina Tar Heel fan. He's the reason I became a fan. Worthy.
Worthy.
Because when you say, listen, when you say Jordan, who's the only person that can hold Jordan under 20 points a game other than Lynn Bias? Dean Smith. Period.
Dean Smith.
Period.
But Jerry Stackhouse.
So Jerry Stackhouse was great. But with James Worthy, he was a leader. He was the type of dude, it was almost like Scottie Pippen in Chicago, Grant Hill in Detroit. They could take over a game without scoring a point. That's
but
what I'm
played,
talking
but,
about.
But Fife, he played with a lot of veteran dudes, man. He played with grown men.
Ooh, James?
I mean, let's be honest. Kenny Smith
Who
was
did?
Playing with the broken hand. I remember Kenny Smith had the broken wrist. He was
wait,
playing
hold
with
on.
The
hold
with
on,
the,
though,
with
hold
the
on, hold on, hold
Jimmy
on.
Black.
Hold on, G.
Come on now.
G, hold on, hold on. Who did you say played with veterans?
Big Game James. Jay Worthy.
Right, well, I mean,
play with Jimmy Black and
okay, but come on, B. Who led them to that title, B? Come on. Stop it. He got Dean his first title. Like that, man.
He was a bad boy. I ain't going to lie. But the history and the tradition, man.
All right. I love Jimmy Black, too. I love Jimmy Black, too. But think of the players who came out of North Carolina that also made it to the Hall of Fame. Billy Cunningham, Larry Brown, James Worthy. Who else? Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? Come on, you can't deny James Worthy, whether he was playing with freshmen or veterans. Doesn't matter. James Worthy is the reason why I became a Tar Heel fan. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. No disrespect to Jimmy Black, because Jimmy Black was my favorite point guard that came out of North Carolina. And you have your Jeff McGinnises and your Ed Coters and your Kenny Smiths. Jimmy Black was that dude. I totally get you on that. But James, Big Game James, they don't call him Big Game for a reason. They call him that for a reason, excuse me.
Yeah. I mean, I never see some of these guys, Gerald Brown, Fife Dog, here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, 347-324-5839. You look at some guys like, I mean, like we said, Doug Moe, Billy Cunningham, Charlie
mm-hmm.
Scott, Bob
yes,
Candu
sir.
McAdoo, Bobby Jones.
Yes, sir.
Kupchak,
yes, sir.
Phil Ford,
yes, sir.
Michael Korn,
yes,
Al Wood was a bad boy, Sam
mm-hmm.
Perkins, Dory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
yes.
They had a hell of a run, man. The list goes on.
The list goes on, and it's only, mind you, there's only 6 or 7 people that have their jersey retired. Like, they have the jerseys in the rafters, but there's only a select few that their jerseys are retired. Worthy's one of those guys. So, in my eyes, that's that dude, man.
Greatest guard to come out of the ACC.
Greatest to see.
Greatest point guard.
Wow. Greatest point guard to come out of the ACC. That is incredibly difficult, kid.
Are you going Charlie Scott? I got somebody I throw out because he was on the show.
You know
what?
I didn't realize Charlie Scott was a point guard. Was he?
Yes. Charlie Scott, yes. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
He seemed so much taller. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Charlie Scott really was a shooting guard. I take that back. Charlie Scott, but Phil Ford was considered one of the point guards and stuff, so I do apologize about that. But
Phil
Ford.
Great. Throw some names at me because there's so many of them. Like, there's so many of them. You're not just talking Carolina. You're talking ACC, right?
I mean, let's go through it. Could you say a guy like John Lucas, the number one pick? Lucas that was All-American in tennis. Could you say
mm-hmm.
Kenny Anderson? Kenny had to leave.
Kenny Anderson was nice. Stephon was nice. Phil Ford was nice. Curtis Staples was
whoa,
nice.
Give Kenny Anderson a little bit more credit than just nice. And Steph was okay. Kenny took that team to the Final Four. Freshman year.
Okay.
Let
me ask you. Who's your favorite point guard from the ACC? Because Kenny is definitely up there. Chibs, no doubt about it. See, you're having a hard time just like me. See?
I would say it would be Kenny and stuff.
Yeah.
Kenny Anderson
was a monster. Let me just say this real quick. It'll have to be Kenny Anderson for me, but I loved Corey Alexander. I love Mark Price. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry. That's my man, too. See, Alexander, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Fife, why you do that?
You know it's real. You know the ACC was real at one point. You know the ACC was real at one point.
Ooh.
Bobby Cremins, even Travis Best had his moments. Bobby Cremins, his pipeline was the Northeast. He knew what it was, even though Mark Price, I believe, is from Oklahoma or something like that. But
Outside
of Mark Price, you know Bobby Cremins' pipeline was the Northeast. Rick Pitino as well. Most of his players was from the Northeast. Roderick Rose, Jamal Mashburn. He wasn't playing. He went back East and got his ballers. You know what I'm saying? But Mark Price was a monster. Kenny Anderson was a monster. Ed Cota was nice. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Ed Cota was nice. Like, yo, be like Rodney Monroe. There's a bunch of dudes from the AC ACC that was nice, man. But I'm going to go with
you.
You got to
go
though.
Chris Corciani and those guys, though.
Yes.
You
got to
go.
Yes,
Chris Corciani.
Yes.
And
Bobby Hurley
was
nice.
A guard, man. Oh, man. I'm drawing a blank because there was a guard.
Jason
for,
Williams.
Yeah, but I'm going back a little
he
further.
Was nice,
Fife. I'm sorry, Fife. I gotta go. Oh man, it's the brother's name. It's just going. It's going to torch me. 8-5-3-4-7-3-2-4-5-8-3-9
Who did he play for? Who did he play for?
He played for Maryland. He was the point guard. He was the big point guard. Not Walt Williams. Not the Wizard. Not the Wizard. The Wizard was nice too. But I'm gonna go back.
What?
Oh man. He played
he
with
guard?
He played with Len Bias.
Oh, Keith Gatling?
Yes.
Keith Gatling?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. You talk
yes.
about a slew of
yes.
guards, man. I mean,
you know what
Chris Corciani.
Was, baby boy.
Hold up.
I got one for you. I got two for you. Muggsy Bogues and Randolph Childress. What? Come
watch
on
your
now.
Mouth. How
Randolph.
You not going to include Chris Paul in there?
I didn't finish. You see what I'm talking about, though? Sam Cassell. What?
Ooh.
Bob Schurer. Come on, baby.
Ooh.
The ACC was serious.
Ooh.
Serious. These are dudes
before
that
we move
made
on,
moves.
I,
in, even
I
Raymond Felton was good
you.
In college. Let's keep it real.
He was. He was unbelievable. And
he
I
was.
Say Jason Williams.
He was.
I got
yeah.
another one for you, Fife.
Go ahead.
You said James Worthy, the greatest ACC. Who is the best ACC player? What would you say overall?
I got to say.
Best ACC.
I got to say Len Bias, B. Len Bias is my favorite ACC player ever. Because he was the one I was scared of when we had to go, when Carolina had to go up against them. Cofield
House. Big man.
Carmichael Auditorium, best big man. Woo!
Here's some names I got for you. Here's some names I got for you. You go Joe Smith. Forget I'm talking about college.
Oh,
Joe
my
Smith.
God. Oh my God! Yes.
Joe Smith, JoJo. Okay, Super Joe. Ralph Sampson, Tim Duncan.
I gotta go Ralph Sampson. And all those names are. Great names. I got to go Ralph Sampson. He dominated everyone. Everyone. It was unfair what he was able to do. Not
yes,
only was he
was,
the tallest dude, but he was crazy athletic. Like, there was nothing he couldn't do. Nothing.
Yeah.
But he's the best big man. Even that dude that became Senator, something like that, played at NC State. What's his name?
Yeah, you're talking about Tom McMullen. Tom McMullen.
He was nice.
Tom Millen.
I'm just
Tom Millen.
Yeah. McMillen or something like that. I'm just going off of footage because I didn't see him play live.
You do Nate McMillen in there. Don't forget, he played with the Wolfpack as well. So it's really interesting.
Tom,
and speaking
Tom
of. Yeah, Tom McMillen, but you said Nate McMillen as well, one of those big guards.
Nate McMillen was in the ACC?
Yes,
the
with NC State. Yes,
what?
NC State.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, I didn't realize that.
6'5", lot of point guards that were there, and you don't even need to check that. We know who that is. Great gentleman. It's been a while since we had him on, and he stays busy. He's writing high school basketball for the Boston Globe. He's also doing some NBA work on Slam with Slam Online, as well as, you know what, he covers the mid-majors and mid-madness and stuff, NCAA basketball. A proud and it's a warm welcome to a longtime friend, Jake Fisher, joining us. Jake, what's going on? Jerrell Brown, the legendary Fife Dog, Tribe Called Quest, Muddy Morphosis, lyricist, legendary individual, and sports enthusiast joining us tonight. How's everything going?
It's going well. I'm stuck up here in the snow in Boston, but it's good to be talking to you guys in New York.
Hey, Jake, let's be clear about one thing. Outside of Fife, Fife is on the north. He's on the west coast. It's not like I'm here in the tri-state area, and it's not like it's about 70 degrees. There's a report that as of Friday, it's supposed to be 18 degrees and like 10 below or something like that. So we're in the same boat, my friend, same boat. I want to ask you, though, Jake, it's great talking to you again. Connection with the Philadelphia 76ers and a lot of stuff that's transpired. Jake, they've been trying to get back to respectability. And the Philadelphia 76ers have won some games recently. KJ McDaniels looking like he's going to be a good player in this league, even without the loss of point guard Tony Roden. Is this enough for the Sixers fan base, Jake, to believe things will get better? Because it's been a tough start. But is there enough that people at the end can look and see the light at the end of the tunnel and not think that it's an oncoming train?
I think it is, and if you look at the last couple of games where they took Atlanta in Atlanta down to the wire, they took Cleveland in Cleveland down to the wire. Last night at home, they held Golden State to I think 89 points, and that's the best offensive team in the entire NBA. That might as well be the best team in the NBA overall too. And look at what this coaching staff has done with guys like KJ McDaniels, like you said. There's also Jeremy Grant, who was another second-round pick. They brought in Robert Covington, who the Rockets cut. No one else in the league wanted him. Now he's one of the top three-point shooters in the NBA. And they've proven with those couple guys right there that they know how to develop talent. And the fans are definitely responding. I mean, last night was nearly a sellout crowd for the Warriors. And those guys also, everyone who showed up at the arena got to see Joel Embiid working up a sweat out on the court, too. So people are definitely starting to buy into what this team is doing because the plan is to build through the draft, and they've shown with McDaniels and Jeremy Grant that they can find diamonds in the rough and develop those guys, too.
Yeah, I've said before that I don't agree with the plan, and I think it's torture to a long-suffering Sixers, Philadelphia fan base there. There's no way you can win exclusively through the draft. You have to bring in some veteran players to help facilitate the growth of that young team where these guys don't have to feel like they carry it all on their shoulders. And I think that, yes, it's nice to stockpile a lot of these great players, college players, but my biggest thing that I start to worry about is, you know, Jake, a lot of these guys are going to get better. But you know what? You're going to possibly be in a situation as they turn the corner, they're potentially going to be heading into that sort of restricted or unrestricted free agency period. And unfortunately, you're not going to be able to re-sign everybody. So what is it really worth? I think that they should bring in some veterans to help facilitate the sort of transition of these college players coming into a situation and learning how to win.
Well, the plan is with this current crop they have now, They're going to have Carter Williams, Noel, McDaniels, Covington, Jeremy Grant. Tony Rhodes out for the year now at the torn ACL, but he's another young guy in the mix. They're going to bring Embiid into the fold next year. They're going to have two more first-round picks, and maybe even Dario Saric comes over from Turkey. And all of a sudden, you have a team that they think maybe could potentially sneak in the back end in the playoffs. And then the summer after that, you start bringing in some veteran guys like going back to when that big 2010 summer when LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Mario Stoudemire and Chris Bosh led the free agent chase. You had players like David West who they weren't the major guys, but David West signing with Indiana really set the tone for that team. And I think you're going to see them go after one of those second-tier grizzly veteran-type guys to really set the tone. I think you'll see that summer 2016. But for now, they're going to keep riding these young guys, and you talked about the tortured fans. It's for fans I've talked to, it's really not a bad place to be because they're going into every game expecting to lose, and when they lose, it helps them get lottery balls towards higher picks. And when they win, it's a huge surprise. It's a shock. It makes a win all that much more sweeter.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we have on the SiriusXM show, we have a lot of Sixer fans call in. And I said, you know, at some point it's very difficult because the mindset of a professional athlete, you know, you're expected to lose. I think that's just so ludicrous to put on these young players who are basically 2 years or 3 years removed, wait, 2 years removed from playing high school basketball. And you're asking them to come in and now understand that, you know, I just think that it sets a bad precedent. I think that you're sort of playing with fire. And right now, if this doesn't go right with Sam Hinkie, his plan, if this doesn't go right, this potentially could set this organization back another 5 to maybe even 10 years, because this whole notion that you're going to get a lot of guys to come there and stuff like that, that's just like what I've said about the New York Knicks. Unless you get a guy like Draymond Green and overpay him to come to New York, that's how it's gonna, that's how difficult it's going to be to recruit free agents to come play in a place that at the end of the day, there's no guarantee you're going to win unless
you
overpay.
This team goes out and they compete every single night. Like I said a few minutes ago, how they're taking Golden State, Cleveland, and Atlanta down to the final wire. And this team, while they struggle offensively, they're the 12th best defensive team. You mentioned they have no veteran players. They have no players who have established themselves in the league. They have guys who probably all of them would still be in college if they weren't basketball players. They still have the 12th best defense in the league, and they get after it every single night. So I think it's too early to say this is a poor plan. I think we definitely have to wait and see how it unfolds.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Jake Fisher joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, 347-324-5839.
Has the progress of Nerlens Noel been what was expected? And is there still concern as far as Noel and Joel Embiid, whether they can play together or not?
I think there's definitely a little bit of concern whether Nerlens can play offensively at all in the NBA. He definitely has struggled on that end of the ball, but defensively is where he's going to make his mark, and he's shown so far this season that he can be the rim protector that people were expecting him to be coming out of Kentucky. I think defensively they'll definitely be successful. They both will be able to guard fours and fives. They're both quick on their feet, and they're both obviously very, very athletic. Offensively, the spacing might be an issue, but Embiid's been showing pregame that he has legitimate 3-point shooting range. So I don't know. It'll be an experiment that'll be fun to see unfold.
Yeah. Now, Jake, the Pacers are interested. I mean, it was a kind of a head-scratching moment last week when Larry Bird, president for the Indiana Pacers, said that, you know what, if, you know, Paul George is cleared to play, they would love to see him play this season. You know, and you have Frank Vogel be a little hesitant. You know, there was a lot of going back and forth and didn't understand why they wanted to get him out there. But, you know, after hearing, I think we talked to one of the reporters and stuff, broadcasters, essentially just having him be able to knock the rust off this year as opposed to next. Should the Sixers, Phil, do the same, or could we expect the Sixers to possibly do the same with a guy like Joel Embiid, get his feet wet this season, and thus he'll have sort of an idea what to expect going into next year?
I personally think Embiid could play right now. I don't think he would be able to play 25 minutes a game because he's definitely not in games conditioning. But I think right now he's healthy enough to play in an NBA game. I don't expect him to actually do that this year. I think the same thing with Paul George. When the Pacers definitely they don't have what it takes to get out of the Eastern Conference. The Sixers obviously don't. I don't think it's worth your time. Look what happened with Derrick Rose and Kobe Bryant when they came back from their injuries, and just like that, they went right back on the shelf. I just think that the potential of getting hurt in a regular season game when it really is meaningless to your team, whether or not you're going to compete for a championship, let alone win it, I don't think it's worth the risk at all.
I mean, you know, Kobe is actually 37 years old. So, I mean, you know, I do understand that. But it allows you to at least perhaps plan for the future. So I see what you're saying. No risk, no reason to sort of risk him getting injured and thus putting him further behind the eight ball.
We've seen so many upsets thus far, you know, small schools beating big schools. LSU almost beat Kentucky tonight. Who are some schools you can already see being a problem come tournament time?
Well, my hot pick for this couple weeks ago would have been Northern Iowa, but obviously now that they're a top 15 ranked team, no one's sleeping on them at all. And Seth Tuttle is absolutely legit compared to we talk about Carl Towns and Jahlil Okafor and some of the other top big men, Frank Kaminsky in the country. He is up there with those guys as someone who can control the paint on both ends of the court. So right now, I've been big on Georgia State ever since they got Ryan Harrow to transfer from Kentucky last year, and then now this year they've added Kevin Ware from Louisville, plus you have Ron Hunter's kid, RJ Hunter, who's one of the best shooters in the country. He probably could be a first-round pick if he leaves this year. They're only 9-4 in the conference right now, and it's definitely going to be tough for Georgia State to even get out of the Sun Belt to get into the tournament. I mean, last year I remember they were up, I think it was 9 points on Elfrid Payton and Louisiana Lafayette with about 2 minutes to go in the conference championship, and Payton and them they forced overtime and they pulled a rug out from under the Panthers like that, and here they are in the dance. So if they get there, I think Georgia State has the shooting and the playmaking ability that most mid majors don't really have, probably because they're loaded with so many high major talented players.
Right.
Yeah, that conference again, Georgia State is really loaded. A lot of transfers that have come in and stuff. Jake, you look at the Villanova Wildcats, and again, that Big East, and Fife and I were talking about really just reminiscing about, you know, the yesteryear of basketball in terms of really in the wake of the passing of the legendary Coach Dean Smith. But looking at the Villanova Wildcats, perhaps the best team in that sort of put-together, revamped Big East conference, are they a product of a semi-weak conference, or are they a team that will make some noise come March?
It's definitely not the Big East of old. I mean, even last year, DePaul made that nice run, and they're obviously having a tough year. But I think Villanova is legit. I mean, they went out and had a pretty impressive non-conference slate. They went undefeated in non-conference play. I mean, they didn't lose a game in all of 2014 at all. Their first loss was that overtime at Seton Hall. That was that Villanova really should have won that game too. So their only two losses on the year are in the conference. And I think we've been watching Jay Wright's four guard spread offense back to the Mike Nardi, Corey Fisher, Scotty Reynolds days, Kyle Lowry, Randy Foy days. He knows that system. He runs that system. He goes out and recruits players that can really carry out what he's trying to execute very well. And I really do think with their size inside and their playmaking ability, I mean, Achefu and Pinkston inside, Hillard, Hart. I always mispronounce Archie Diacono's name, but I really think that Villanova is legit. I don't know if they're a shoo-in to make the Final Four, but they're gonna be there definitely past the second weekend in the Sweet 16 for sure.
Yeah. Well said.
What are your thoughts on the passing of the legendary Dean Smith?
Well, my first thought was that it was surprising because usually when someone of his stature, who's been around the game for so long, passes away, it's usually something that I'm just trying to think of Joe Paterno and John Wood, and like we expected these guys because they were sick or whatever. It wasn't like he was having any complications or anything like that. It was a thing where you just woke up, checked your phone, and saw all of a sudden Dean Smith is dead, and that was my first thought about it. It was surprising, and then to think about the impact he's had on the college game, I mean, let alone the amount of tremendous players that he later on went to the NBA, but think about the coaches that he's had an impact on. I mean, Roy Williams, would he even be continuing on the legacy that Smith left without Smith even being there? I mean, it's pretty impressive to see. We talk about Greg Popovich's coaching tree and his impact on his players that he's had in San Antonio. Dean Smith had the same thing, if not more, at UNC.
No, that's well said. And, I mean, You know, I wanted to ask you another question, and Jake Fisher joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. In terms of Fife and I really discussing, you know, you look at some of the, you know, if you will, the sort of Mount Rushmore of college coaches from John Thompson and Boeheim, Mike Krzyzewski, Dean Smith, and the late, great John Wooden. Will we ever see coaches? I mean, you could throw Pitino in that equation, but, I mean, he did go to the NBA. But will you ever see coaches stay in one place and be able to have that sort of longevity at one place ever again? I mean, you know, I've said that again, social media and it has really taken over a lot of things, and really the effect, it prevents guys being able, it's such a pressure cooker, you know, you have to win now and have to have success right out the bat. Do you ever think that we will see some of these great coaches like that, that are able to stay at one job for a long period of time?
We just talked about Villanova. I don't think Jay Wright's leaving anytime soon. You go down over the A-10. I don't think Shaka Smart's ever leaving VCU. Tommy Amaker at Harvard, he's been to he's been through that high major power conference lifestyle at Michigan. I think, I know his wife has a very high up job at Harvard. I don't think he's leaving Harvard anytime soon. Those are the first couple guys that come to my mind. I think we definitely have some programs right now that have coaches in them that are going to be there for the long haul, because those schools, and what it really comes down to is when those schools, their basketball team's identity is just as much that coach as it is that school's logo and their arena and their history. And all those three guys clearly have had just as big an impact on those programs as the players have.
Yeah, and that, I think also, too, is able to win in an environment where there's no pressure. You know, I think that, and we were talking about this in regards to a guy like, you know, John Calipari. If he wasn't able to win immediately when he got to, you know, Kentucky, you know, we might be hearing people calling for his head. Clearly, he would be out of there right now if that was the case. Jake, what is some of the stuff? Where can people find a lot of your work and all the stuff that you have possibly upcoming?
I actually have a feature on Jeff Teague's All-Star, how he got to become an All-Star, coming out on SB Nation. I think it'll be going live on Friday. And I'm still covering the Sixers at SB Nation's Sixers blog, libertyballers.com. I'm still with Slam and Mid-Major Madness as well. So nothing's changed. Everything I do, everything I'll update on is on Twitter at Jake L. Fisher. So if you want to keep tabs on me, that's the best place to do it.
Yeah. Hey, Jake, listen, it's always a pleasure, man, to talk to you. And now that the NFL season is over, we got pretty much this month, and in the blink of an eye, we're going to be getting ready for March Madness. So we definitely look forward to getting a 411 from you as we close in on March Madness, which happens to be right around the corner.
I'm excited. Thanks for having me back. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Always appreciate you. The hardest working man in college basketball, Jake Fisher. Nothing but love for him, man. Outstanding young man. He works hard and gives you some very, very insightful information and stuff, and covers those Philadelphia 76ers and really gives some tremendous insight on that. I have to disagree with him, though, in terms of that's torture down there for those fans. That's torture. You're selling seats and tickets for $1, $2 and stuff. You need to stop that. And I said, look, God bless Sam Hinkie for the fact is the Knicks are as terrible as they are. But if this doesn't work out, that organization is going to be set back another – maybe 5 to 10 years. It's just going to be really interesting. Now, Fife, speaking of NBA action, you look at the Los Angeles Clippers and stuff. They lose Blake Griffin for at least a month. How big of a loss will that be for those Clippers?
It's a huge loss, but I see Chris Paul playing out of his mind the next couple of weeks. But I'm not sure how high they'll be seated regardless. You know what I mean? So that's a huge loss, huge.
Yeah, I think it's, again, yeah, they were able to somehow, you know, DeAndre Jordan became offensively minded, and he had 27 rebounds the other night. I just think that it's going to be huge, and really you're going to have to see, like you said before, Chris Paul is going to have to step up. Now, Knicks' Carmelo Anthony is going to try to play tomorrow. Has he hurt his knee in the night, Monday night loss versus the Miami Heat? As a Knicks fan, should he play in the All-Star game, Fife? I mean, they're not going anywhere, but still in all, he's being paid a lot of money. Do you want him to risk him out there playing in the All-Star game?
I definitely don't want him to risk his health playing in an All-Star game after getting that mammoth of a contract. At the same time, you know, with the sorry season that the Knicks have endured so far, I'd like to see him in an All-Star game, but it's not that important. So I think he needs to just rest himself and just chill. Show up,
yeah.
You know, show up, show your face, and have a seat, baby.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be out there. And then, you know, it was a big story yesterday where James Dolan really had a fan email him, and then he sent another email calling the fan an alcoholic and just, you know, don't root for the Knicks, root for the Nets, we don't want you. But yet Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, really stepped in and said he was not going to sort of fine or penalize James Dolan. Was the commissioner wrong in that? I didn't see anything wrong with that. Was he wrong in your eyes?
I think he should at least fine him. Because you can't – come on, man. Just because you went through something like that, you can't call out another fan. You can't call that fan a drunk and try sobriety and yada yada. Come on, man. That's ridiculous. You're owner of the team. Grow up. You know what I mean? Ignore it. Keep it moving.
Let me ask you this.
He's a professional, man.
Fife Dawg, Gerald Brown here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Fife, you are a star, okay? You are a star,
yes.
And you have to deal with the public. So
yes.
If you have people tweet you or say stuff or email you, you have no right to respond whatsoever?
Trust me, I respond.
Why should you be penalized for responding, especially if somebody attacks you in a negative manner? Why should you have to be able to always take the high road and not say anything? Why shouldn't you have the right to be able to at least respond?
I feel you, but I don't mind him responding. I don't have a problem with that. But to call him out on some try sobriety, and I've tried it, and come on, B. You're doing too much. All he had to do was say two letters to him, and you know what those two letters are. Press send. That's it. You know what I'm saying? You're a sad person. Your family must not like you. Why don't you try sobriety? It worked for me. And da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, first of all, you shouldn't have the right to say none of that because what you're doing with this team is not cool. It's not good. Ever since you took over. What you mad at? We're supposed to be mad at him. But if you want to talk back, don't say that. Just say, you know, those two letters I was talking about. And keep it moving. Come on. He was doing too much.
Yeah, it's just, I agree with you on that. You know, Sacramento Kings, Greg, first of all, Greg Popovich picked up his 1,000th victory last night as the Spurs beat the Pacers in Indiana, and congratulations to him. Where do you rank him with the all-time greats? He joins the list of Pat Riley and Phil Jackson. Where do you rank him, though?
Popovich, he's my number two coach. Well, as far as Mount Rushmore, I put him on there. But he's like after Phil Jackson for me. Definitely.
After Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you put him over Pat Riley?
Yeah, I do. That's difficult for me because I'm a Pat Riley fan. You think of Pat Riley in L.A., he had the Magics, he had the Worthies, he had the Kareems. He had a crew. He did a great job as a coach. And then he was able to adapt when he came to New York with the whole grind-it-out system that he had with Oakley and Patrick and so forth. And then, of course, same thing
pretty much in Miami. But I got to give it to Popovich, man. I got to give it to him. Just play
it's
that
he's,
day,
he's not,
fine.
Yeah, he's and, never won a back-to-back, you know, NBA Finals. He's never won championship back-to-back. So I thought that was really interesting. But the craziest story, and, I mean, again, it seems like sources are reporting that it's already a done deal. They're going, the Sacramento Kings are going to hire George Karl. Really, it's bizarre because they had recently stated that interim head coach Tyrone Corbin would finish the season as head coach after replacing fired head coach Mike Malone, who was fired in the early part of the season after the team lost DeMarcus Cousins to viral meningitis early in the season. Fife, what kind of message are you sending to the Sacramento Kings, are the Sacramento Kings sending to their fan base by doing this? Three coaches in less than 6 months.
Right. The message that they're sending is that they're panicking. I mean, you know, they have a new arena coming soon, so they're trying to get back on the map as far as where the organization was when it was Bibby and Divac and Weber and Peja and those guys. They're trying to get back to that level, new owners, so forth, Shaq co-owned. But the message that they're sending is that they're panicking. The only thing that I could say will put the fans at ease is that George Karl has been a winner. That's the only thing that could really put them at ease right now. Now,
but
will it work out?
Is he the right
I'm
fit,
not
though,
sure.
Fife?
Huh? What did you say?
Is he the right fit for them?
I don't know if he's the right fit because that team is very, very young. I don't know if they're going to be able to handle the veteran leadership or criticism that George Karl has always brought to the table. I don't know if it's going to work. But I do know he's a good coach, and they need to buy into what he's selling. They really do. And it starts with the market.
Yeah, and I think that here's the thing. When you make – I think it's unfortunate because somehow – I've always said you got to be careful of what type of moves you make because if you think about it, you fire Mike Malone, and again – that was a head scratcher because people said it was philosophical differences and all these other crazy things. They want to be the Golden State Warriors, which they're not. I thought that they started out the season respectable. The team was playing. They had sort of a sense of an identity. They were playing defensively. They just fell apart towards the second half with the tail end of a second and third and fourth quarters of each and every single game. When you lose DeMarcus Cousins to viral meningitis, and now all of a sudden you bring in Tyrone Corbin. He was the guy that, clearly was not going to get the job at the end of the season unless they stayed in the playoff hunt. That was the case. And what you have been seeing is a team that essentially has quit because they know they don't have a shot. He's not going to be there long term, so why should I listen to him? And thus, you decide to bring in George Karl. I just don't know if he's right for this team because what is the direction of this Sacramento Kings team? Are they a playoff team next year? I don't think so. Is George Karl going to be there for the duration, the long haul? No. I've always said maybe Mark Jackson didn't want that job, but I thought that you should bring in a coach, let them grow, and let them establish that. Mark Jackson might have been a great hire, and I just don't know what's going to happen with a guy like George Karl because – are you saying that you must win in 2 years' time? Are you saying that you must win in 3 years' time? I mean, I don't know if that's going to be afforded a lot of time. And if this doesn't work out, you're going to have an upset and very, very honorary player in DeMarcus Cousins that's going to want to get out of there. And you don't want to go down that road. You don't want to go down that road. Yeah, so
that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really interesting. Now, Fife, also, Dwayne Wade, he's going to be out. Kyle Korver makes the All-Star team, bringing that total of four Atlanta Hawks on that team and rightfully deserving. But also Anthony Davis is battling a shoulder injury along with Carmelo Anthony, as we mentioned earlier. He's going to have to test it out on Wednesday before he plays. Should either one of these guys – I mean, Dwayne Wade is out, but should, like Carmelo Anthony – do you risk putting Anthony Davis out there and participating in the All-Star game?
I mean, if I'm the GM of any of these teams and they have a chance
to do big things come postseason? No. And I've been watching the Pelicans the last 3-4 weeks, and they've been gelling. They've been coming together. So I don't know how far they'll go in the playoffs because they're young as well. But Eric Gordon is starting to play like we expected a few years ago. I definitely wouldn't put Anthony Davis out there because he's MVP caliber. I don't think he'll win MVP this year. He's definitely up there. I wouldn't put him in the game. So
yeah,
it seems like I
wouldn't do it.
The players you want to see will not play in this game if I had anything to do with it.
Yeah, I think that that was, again, really telling. And keep in mind, Tyreke Evans has been playing very, very well in terms of just really helping out, playing and filling in for Drew Holiday, who has been out with injury. I want to get your thoughts on the fact is that former Laker Magic Johnson was very, very – had some serious questions about whether Jim Buss can return the team with the Lakers around. And just really, he was on First Take today and just really saying that he's not really consulting with anybody. And really, he's just basically doing this on his own. And just the whole problems that's having that's really transpiring with the Lakers. How surprised are you to have a guy who is very well respected in Magic Johnson calling out management, especially when he was very, very – he was a part of management?
I'm not surprised at all. And if I was Magic, I'd do the same thing because it's almost like a division problem. You make one mistake and the whole thing comes out wrong. That's basically what happened when he avoided hiring Phil Jackson and he hired D'Antoni. Once he did that, the ship went down. The ship went down. Totally. Like, who does that? 2 + 2 = 5. That's dumber than Pete Carroll's call at the end of the Super Bowl. You don't hire D'Antoni over Phil Jackson. You don't do that. That's just ridiculous. So I have no problem with Magic Johnson calling out Jim Buss. And the other thing Jim Buss needs to do is let his sister take over, period. Whether she was going to hire Phil or not, dating or going out, married, whatever they are, whether she did that or not, I personally feel like she knows what she's doing versus that guy, period.
Well, I mean, yeah, Five Star Gerald Brown here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, 347-324-5839. Magic said something also was really interesting. He said, and quote, and I really believe this, Kobe should say to Jim and them, look, if you don't sign one of these free agents this offseason, man, I'm just not going to play next year. Close quote. How surprised would you be if Kobe decided to do that? You know, what would that say in terms of how would you feel about Kobe doing that?
I wouldn't be mad at Kobe for doing that, but I can't see him doing it because he loves the game of basketball. But I wouldn't be mad if he did. I wouldn't be mad if he did.
It's just amazing how things are really transpiring with the once promising and proud Los Angeles Lakers organization and stuff.
Yeah.
And then also one other thing I want to add, Jimmy Butler has left the game against the Sacramento Kings tonight. He has a shoulder strain. A lot of guys that were voted in, you might not be able to play. And, I mean, again, we're days away from the All-Star game and stuff. Surprises a guy, you know, again, Jimmy Butler. He's got a lot of money waiting for him, Fife. He doesn't need to be out there. Agree or disagree?
I totally agree. The game is not that important that you have to throw these guys out there. And then you have the city of Chicago upset because the team is spiraling out of control because he's banged up. So
yeah.
If I'm the GM of the Chicago Bulls, if I'm Paxton, he's sitting down. He's not playing in that game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. Now, Fife, switching gears, talk a little football right here. Granted, football season is over, but technically it's never over. It's 365 days a year, 7 days a week. According to reports, Peyton Manning has begun workouts for his 18th season upcoming. Could this move by Peyton force the Broncos and John Elway, namely, to look to re-sign both Demaryius Thomas, the outstanding wide receiver, and tight end Julius Thomas? Could a move like this, and perhaps maybe Peyton Manning's last year, force Elway to try to find a way to sign both of these guys who were very instrumental to that offense?
I think it's a no-brainer. I think he should. If Peyton's coming back, definitely, he should absolutely sign those two, Demaryius Thomas and Julius Thomas. Absolutely. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to. And Fife, if you look at the team, if you're a team, you know, that's in search of a quarterback, are you better off looking to draft a quarterback than rather sign a free agent quarterback? Because, I mean, this year's free agency class and quarterbacks, it is, mm-hmm. and it's been this way since last year. It's not there. Are you better off looking to sign a draft a quarterback as opposed to try to sign a free agent quarterback?
I think with this upcoming draft, there's a handful of quarterbacks out there. If you could position yourself to get perhaps the best quarterback that you can get, draft them, but make sure that you have a spare tire or you could get a free agent quarterback to come in there and they could sit and learn. If you can do that, fine, draft a quarterback. But I'm not so sure that there are enough quarterbacks coming out in this year's draft that you should even beat yourself in the head and try and draft one. I think maybe you should look to get a free agent quarterback, like I said, depending on your positioning in the draft.
Yeah, I just think that, again, Brian Hoyer might be a top player out there. And, I mean, let's be honest, you know, Brian Hoyer, Geno Smith, and a guy like E.J. Manuel up there. You might have to try to win with those guys. But speaking of Brian Hoyer, should the Cleveland Browns look to start over at the QB position rather than to sign free agent quarterback Brian Hoyer, who's going to command some money?
Oh, man. I think they should re-sign Brian Hoyer. And I say that I'm really freestyling this. I'm saying that because I'm not sure what pick do the Browns have in the draft this year. Do you know offhand?
I believe that in terms of this upcoming draft, I got to check that out. I think they might have a top pick and stuff like that. But, you know, it's again, you have Johnny Manziel there. So, I mean, are you just basically closing the door on Johnny Manziel?
I don't think they should close the door on Johnny Manziel, but they should keep Brian Hoyer, definitely. I think they should. I don't know if they'll be able to get a quarterback that can win right now. And at least Hoyer, he's capable. You know, he knows the system. He's been there already. No, I mean, I think they should go with Hoyer, honestly.
Well, they have the 12th pick as well as the 19th pick. So they have two picks within the top 20. They should be able to turn over some guys and stuff. And, I mean, look, if you draft another quarterback, does that say that really you made a mistake in drafting Johnny Manziel? I mean, you know, the lack of quarterbacks that's out there, it's going to force teams like the Jets to keep Geno Smith. I mentioned E.J. Manuel. Maybe Rex Ryan can try to do something there. You have, Zach Mettenberger and Jake Locker down there in Tennessee. And hang on these young quarterbacks and develop them. Because, Fife, we've talked about this before. You look at the league. You're seeing more guys come out of college and play. In some cases, they're not ready, and yet they don't have the time to develop because if they start getting a chance to move around and all that other stuff, now they're not in the position to be able to stay with an offense and be able to learn from that offense and develop. Agree or disagree?
I totally agree with you. I couldn't have said it better. It's not enough great ones that I'm seeing coming through this draft right now. So you might as well develop the guys you already have or at least trust in them, something. And when it comes to the Cleveland Browns, they have so much going on right now, man. So much going on right now that I think the best thing to do
his role with Brian Hoyer, period.
Yeah. 347-324-5839, 347-324-5839. Reports have surfaced that the Indianapolis Colts have having some issues with running back Trent Richardson, who came from the Cleveland Browns in that blockbuster deal after being a top first-round pick. Has his time run out in Indianapolis as well as the NFL, Fife? He hasn't been the back that they thought they were getting when they gave up a first-round draft pick.
I don't know if his time's run out in the NFL as a whole, but I think his time has definitely run out in Indianapolis. I mean, if you look at the playoffs, we didn't even see him. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Good point.
You know, and he was hit and miss all through the season. Like, you see him one game, and then you won't. He played good one game, and then he won't for a whole month. And I think he's done in Indianapolis. And God willing, hopefully he's not done in the NFL as a whole. But he's definitely done in Indianapolis.
Yeah, it just doesn't look good. Fife, also, there's reports that Marshawn, running back Marshawn Lynch of the Seattle Seahawks, is still making up his mind about playing again. How surprised would you be if Lynch decided to retire, Fife?
I'd be absolutely surprised if he decided to retire, for the simple fact he's a monster. He's top five in my eyes as far as running backs in the league right now. And, you know, then again, maybe that call at the end of the game is urging him to retire. I don't know. I can't call it. But I'd definitely be surprised. I'd definitely be surprised, because he could do so much for whether he goes back to Seattle or wherever he went. He could do so much for a team.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. And I'll tell you why. He has endured 2 years of really just the enormous scrutiny, forcing him to try to talk in the media situation, and that's the flip side of winning. And yet,
right,
his style is such a violent style in terms of running. His running style is so violent. And, I mean,
absolutely,
this breaks my heart that I think it was just yesterday I saw the article in terms of where Tony Dorsett, the legendary Hall of Fame running back for the Dallas Cowboys, saying that, you know,
right,
he's suffering from CTE and he didn't know it was going to be like this. When you run so violent as Marshawn Lynch, you got to know when to say when, because you don't want to end up like a guy like Earl Campbell and having those situations with Tony Dorsett. And I think that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I think that it would be a great move, and really being in a situation where perhaps he just decides to walk away from it, because again, you know, when you play at that elite level, it's very, very tough to go somewhere else, especially for the money. It's very, very difficult. The man responsible for the birth of NFL films, the late, great Ed Sable, passed away at the age of 98 the other day. What does Sable mean to the NFL today, today's NFL game, Fife?
Oh, man, if it wasn't for Ed Sable, there'd be no NFL network. And, you know, the NFL is the type of league, or football is the type of sport, where every game counts, and you have to wait from one weekend to the next weekend. You're amped, you're antsy, you're waiting to see these games. And being what he was able to bring to the league, what he's able to invent, or what have you, you get to watch football never ends, it seems like, with the NFL Network and what all these variety shows that you're able to see. So if it wasn't for his vision, we wouldn't have any of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he was a guy that essentially had the vision and the know-how to really develop the game. And I thought that was a great point. There would be no NFL Network in terms of, you know, you didn't have the visual components, because you had NFL films that was taking place in a day and an era that there was no Sunday NFL ticket. You could not watch every single game. You would see some highlights of certain games, but for the most part, you didn't have sort of the ESPN. You had your television, and the local stations would give you the highlights of the Jets and the Giants, and then you would see the rundown of the scores from the game. There was none of that that was there, and this was a man that was able to make something a la maybe turning sports into a music video, and essentially develop something that is synonymous and is a fabric of what the NFL culture is about today. And, you know, again, God rest his soul, and 98 years old, tremendous legend into the sport of football and mainly to NFL TV going forward.
Perfect example. 68 playoffs, Raiders and Jets. The game gets cut off in order for the TV network to show Heidi, I believe it was. Imagine if Ed Sable didn't come with what he came with. You know what I'm saying? And now that's a playoff game, AFC Championship or something like that. Come on now. So Ed Sable, Steve Sable, may they both rest in peace. Absolutely.
Well said. Well said. I mean, can you imagine if they didn't have that? I mean, we would not see the game the way we see it. Mm-hmm. And, again, Ed Sable and his son, Steve Sable, both rest in peace. Fife, this weekend is All-Star Weekend festivities. What's the best event you're looking forward to seeing, Fife?
I don't know, man. The celebrity game with Michael Rapaport. I don't know. That'll be fun. But, because the dunk contest, the last great dunk contest was when All-Stars was here in the Bay Area. Vince Carter put on a show. Steve Francis was in it. Tracy McGrady was in it. Stackhouse was in it. That was the last great dunk contest. Ever since then, it's been dwindling, you know, here and there, and it hasn't been as fun. I'm hoping it could change this season, but until the main bigwigs of the league join in, like a Blake Griffin or a LeBron in the contest itself, it's not going to be that great. You know what I mean? Because at least if you have those big names in the contest, and then you have a lesser big name in the contest, and he just happens to beat them, like underdog status, that'll be fun. But it's not happening, so I don't really have anything to look forward to but the Saturday night events in Brooklyn on a whole. So the three-point contest, the Taco Bell, what they call that? With a point guard, what do they call that?
Well, the skills challenge.
Skills challenge. That's usually fun. So, you know, Saturday night on a whole is usually fun. I watch everything, but that's what I look forward to, the whole Saturday night events.
I look forward, and I agree with you. I mean, you're talking about Vince Carter really was a guy that put on a show. And, you know, if anybody's thinking that LeBron James at this juncture of his career is going to get out there and perform, you could, again, I got a bridge to sell you. That's not happening. It's going to be really interesting to see what type of, again, this year's dunk contest could either sink or swim. It could basically sink the dunk contest as we know, because you got the names, Andrew Wiggins, you got Zach LaVine. If these guys are able to put on a show between these two guys, I think that will bring a little bit more life into it. I tell you this, you know, this year, Fife, we could possibly see the best three-point shooting contest that we've seen in quite some time. But more importantly, the three-point shooting contest could be something that many people will look forward to seeing as opposed to the dunk contest. Agree or disagree?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry.
I said that this year's three-point shooting contest will be something that will be looked upon a lot higher than the slam dunk competition.
I guess you have a point. I guess you have a point. I'm just hoping you're correct. every year I expect it to be this, that, and the other, and it's really simple. Remember back in the days where you had one shot at a particular dunk. I think it needs to go back to that. All these different, like the years Nate Robinson won it, I wanted him to win. But if you miss it the first time and you get four or five different chances and you have to beat the clock, I'm not really feeling that. That's, you know, I think the more pressure you put them under, the better the outcome will be, because they know they have to make that one dunk. You know what I mean?
Yeah, good point. I mean, I totally agree with you. You know, it's something that it's going to be something. And, I mean, the three-point shooting contest, I mean, you got the Thompson, the Splash Brothers are in there. You got a slew of guys that are going to be participating, really good shooters. And it's going to be really interesting to see how well that field plays out. Now, the rookie game this year has been switched, which was a smart move because you had a lot of rookies that were injured. Yeah. Jabari Parker's not playing. But you have now this year the USA versus the world. How big of a move was that for the NBA to switch up that format?
Huge, and I'm loving it. That's the matter of fact, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be nice. You know what I mean? I really totally agree with whoever came up with that idea, Adam Silver, whoever it may be. I think that's like the key to All-Star Weekend this weekend. I'm hoping it'll be the dunk contest in the actual game. But I think that right there, America versus the world, that'll be fire. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that should be really outstanding. That takes place Friday night. Right after the celebrity game, and Mike Rappaport, I actually text Mike, and he's looking forward to that and hoping that he's able to get out there and put on a good show and don't hurt himself at all. You know, also some of the challenge you have, Penny Hardaway is actually coming to town. He's going to be participating in the skills challenge as well with James Harden and Dominique Wilkins and other veterans and stuff. Should the NBA look to do the same for the All-Star game and make it a USA versus the world? Maybe every other year?
Yeah, I think that'll be great, especially with the injuries that unfortunately come up like this particular season. You know what I mean? I think that'll be definitely a good move, a very good move, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, change it up, you know, every year and stuff, and really change it up.
Yeah.
And have something where you could do it perhaps every other season, you know, really be in a situation where that you allow, you know, again, something new. And, I mean, it'd be something really new and maybe do it every other year and see how it turns out. Should the having Damian Lillard replace Blake Griffin, and although he hasn't played well, possibly Anthony Davis and all those guys not being there along with Melo and Wade, will the All-Star game have enough star power, Fife?
I don't think so. I don't think it'll have enough star power. But it's those times where, you know, we sleep on something like that, and it ends up being a very good game from start to finish. So, but as far in terms of star power, like, I think the fans are going to be very upset that they're not going to see who they truly expected to see. But being a basketball nut that I can say you and I are, I think it'll end up being a pretty good game. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, if you follow the game, I mean, clearly this game is, you know, you're marketing this game for the sort of non-traditional sports NBA enthusiasts. You know, this is the game for them. You know, we're going to lock in and we're going to watch this game regardless. But you want to sort of cater to that, so you're going to have you want to have those names that are there. As I mentioned before, if the slam dunk contest is a dud, should they really take it away for a while, Fife?
I'm not going to say yes to that. I'm just hoping we could get some star power eventually in the dunk contest. It'll come back.
LeBron is not doing it, Fife.
Huh?
LeBron is not doing it. He's not doing it.
All right. But I don't think they should take it away. Because then what do we have to look forward to?
I don't want to see 7-footers up there dunking. I don't want to see that at all.
So
you know, 7-footers dunking. Yeah, put
so
something
you
out there.
Want,
I mean,
you want to have a celebrity dunk contest? That's what you want to do? You want to see Michael Rabbit?
I mean, no, please, I mean, I was telling Michael when we were on the show on Sirius XM how Michael used to ask me every single day in school. We went to the same high school, and Mike knew I was a ball boy for the Knicks, and every day he would ask me about the Knicks. And I just wanted to be like, stop it. And I applaud him for his passion, and Michael remembers that. You know, every day he would ask me about the Knicks. But I would say put the rookie game that you have on Friday – put that on Saturday and replace the slam dunk competition. You know, you can't do the old-timers game no more. Put the slam dunk competition on ice if it's not good and let you have the rookies versus the world on a totally a night where you pack everything on Saturday night and just have your celebrity game be the marquee thing.
Right. I guess you got a point, but I don't know. I guess I'm spoiled. I'm so used to what it's always been. Like I said, change the rules to that one dunk. Okay, sit down. Next.
Straight up.
It just, I don't know how much it would be, how entertaining it would be. But if that goes that way, it would be something that would be worth seeing. Fife, before we get on out of here, what's your bottom line for tonight?
My bottom line for tonight is rest in peace, Dean Smith, and prayers are definitely up for Jerry Tarkanian.
Yes, well said. Well said. I'll echo the same sentiments. Again, you know, Jerry Tarkanian, again, is battling some health issues. My bottom line is also rest in peace to Desmond Merriweather, a gentleman I had the pleasure of meeting a couple of times, and he was a guy that if you saw the Penny Hardaway E60 story, he was a gentleman who's Penny's friend, childhood friend, who really had battled colon cancer, was really an advocate in having Penny come back to the old neighborhood and really buy into coaching middle school kids and stuff. And he was featured a part of the story on E60 with Penny. Lost the battle with cancer at the age of 43. So really, really rest in peace to Desmond Merriweather. His family and condolences go out to them. It's just been a fortunate weekend of, you know, death and passing of individuals. Yeah. As we mentioned at Sable, you also had Dean Smith. So, again, rest in peace all the way across the board. A couple of tidbits before we get on out of here. University of Kentucky continues on as the only undefeated team, improving to 24-0. But it was a doozy, 71-69. You know, it really been in a situation where they should have lost that game. Also, Alex Rodriguez and the Yankees got a chance to meet. They definitely put things in the past. They need him. They need him. I don't know which type of Alex Rodriguez they're getting, but it's one that's going to get paid. He's going to get paid.
Yes, sir.
Yep. And it should be really interesting to see that happen. And also, the Little League is reviewing the eligibility issues with the the United States champions, the team from Chicago, amid allegations that much of the celebrated squad violated a rule prohibiting the use of players who lived outside of the geographic area that the team represents. They said that there will be an announcement tomorrow, and I don't want to say it's right to bend the rules. I don't think that it's right to bend the rules, but let's keep in mind the city of Chicago has really, really been hit on some hard times, especially in the low income areas affecting minorities. And what these young people were able to do for some time last year, I hope that is not taken away and overshadowed of the fact is that these young people got out there. Now, if they were a different age, I'd say it's a totally different story. Unfortunately, they should not be out there. But if it's a situation where kids lived in a different area, I don't know, Fife. I have to say you perhaps may want to bend the rules a little. I mean, you know. I would say, you know, perhaps look the other way or whatever and just see that take place. I'd like to thank Jake Fisher for jumping on the line with us and really talking some basketball, giving us all caught up. Football's going to be on the back burner now. We're going to be really focusing a lot on basketball as we move closer and closer to college basketball, getting ready for March Madness. A couple of quick scores before we get on out of here. Brooklyn loses to the Memphis Grizzlies. No surprise there. You have the Detroit Pistons taking down the Charlotte Hornets, who picked up Mo Williams from the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Chicago Bulls, no problem with the George Karl-led Sacramento Kings, 104-86. And the last game on the docket tonight, you'll have the Denver Nuggets taking on the Los Angeles Lakers. For Fife Dog, I'm Gerald Brown. Thank you so much. Bottom Line Sports Show is out. We'll see you next Tuesday. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday. Peace.
Peace.